That seems to work every time. All right, guys. Katie, alcoholic. Hi, guys. Oh, my gosh. Charlie and I were talking, and it's like, so how are we going to stick this liver story in here? I think it does, too. Chad tied it in, and I'm going to start when I start step three. I'm going to add that to it. We're Charlie, my daughter says Charlie has 9 lives. You know, he's had the plane crash, and that it's amazing how he can bounce back. Not everybody in the world gets 9 lives. I do think the drunk gets about 20, but, you know. I don't know about you guys, but Charlie and I are sleeping in a double bed. Yeah, thank you. Oh, my God. At one point, I had both legs hanging off the back. I have never had that happen in my life. And then I had one leg hanging off the side, and I mean, I look over at him, and he's like, I thought, dude, this is, he slept great. I need to pull a twin bed in there. You know, I'm like, I want my own bed. I remember this place so well, and the view that we get is really beautiful, and there's so many flipping pictures of Jesus, but this one has always reminded me of Bob Marley. I think that is the Bob Marley Jesus. I know, it's like, that is Bob Marley. Jesus dressed as Bob Marley. I also forgot my fabulous gray shoes, so I'm wearing the shoes that don't go with this outfit if you're looking at them and think they're weird. Talking about the third step, I always like to say freedom comes when you realize you're a hypocrite. I mean, the alcoholic is the biggest hypocrite ever. We immediately judge people for something I either did 15 minutes ago or am going to do it in 15 minutes. And when you really wake up to watch yourself, instead of judge yourself for being a hypocrite, just watch for it. We had we were on our way to the airport. We go to the airport a lot. And we're on our way to the airport, and this Cadillac Escalade comes from a side street and curves, and I mean, he's hitting the gravel and he almost hits us, scares the crap out of me. And the first thing I thought of is, what an idiot. And then I thought, I could be him. I mean, I could be either person in this play. I could be the one that got the crap scared out of him or the one that scared the crap out of him. And that's what I want you to try to be watching for. Just, and you may do nothing, but just watch what's in your head and watch how often you are a hypocrite, because that's the beauty of what this whole thing's going to roll into, is to see where you made decisions based on self that later placed you in a position to be hurt. And then we're going to see how you've done that almost exact thing to somebody else, but you have the story that goes along with it, because that's what we do. But you see, you don't understand. My situation was different. I didn't do, well, no, it wasn't any different. It was exactly the same, or close enough to being the same. That's what we always have to be looking for. When it says in the fourth step, we're going to swallow and digest large chunks of truth about yourself, it's not that the person listening to the inventory is being mean. They're just being direct. And, of course, there's compassion and all of that in it. I mean, if you're crying, I'm not going to start laughing at you or something like that. I may think that on the inside. It's like, oh, what a big weenie we got here. But, you know, I mean, I'm still going to keep rolling with it. But, you know, to me, that's the great gift that we have that nobody else really has. The world doesn't always look at it from a different angle. So if you go to counseling, and I think counseling's a privilege. Don't hear me not counseling. I've done it all my life. I mean, I've done so goddamn much counseling, I could facilitate a group right here. And it's one of the things that I think it's a great privilege. However, when we're talking about the inventory process, what counselors' jobs are to talk about who you're pissed off at and call them one, Dad. What did he do? He shamed me, he never listened to me, and he loved my sister more. Call him two. Column three, what did that affect? My self-esteem, my pride, my ambition. We're going to talk a lot about that in counseling. But we're never going to get to the fourth column, how I made decisions based on self. So that doesn't mean throw away counseling. That means you take your counseling session to your sponsor so she can point out the fourth column, because that's our job, right? That's our job, is to work all that together. You know, it's interesting. Chad was saying that the third step can be very tied into Charlie's liver could be tied into the third step. And I got to tell you, old ideas, old experience, past experience, if we're not careful, we wear them as a badge of honor. You know, my mom died when I was 8. And so when you talk to me, you're going to know that pretty quickly. So if you and your mom had a great relationship, I really don't want to hear about it. That's really what I'm doing. I had no idea I was doing that. You know, you have to write a lot of inventory to be able to watch how I'm going to show up. Some people act like, oh, they take this thing a little far. Have at it, man. If you don't want to go that far, you don't have to go that far. All I can tell you is the relationship I have with my Creator today is mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. I had no idea how at ease I am in life. And this is a high-strung, wrapped tight little mighty mouse. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm in the middle of running over there. There's a guy at the hike and bike trail that the youth of today bugs the crap out of me. Okay, let's be very clear on that. Bugs the crap out of me. Level of disrespect is shocking. And I could go down the list. So I love this hike and bike trail. It's a really fabulous place in Austin, Texas that I go and I do a lot of my exercises. Been an athlete all my life. It's 3 times a week. It's right across the street from a high school. It's a little challenging for me. They're everywhere. And I've learned I can't go there when they have a lunch break or get out of school, because I'm telling you what, they don't care. They walk right in front of your car. They never look up. Well, I want to run over them. I want to at least put it in neutral and rev the engine and scare the crap out of them. Go, yeah, that got your attention, didn't it? Yeah, okay. Look me in the eye, please. Okay, I have a real problem with this. So I have to work very hard in that area. It doesn't make me a bad person. I just know where a lot of my defects of character are. And I get out of the car, and I happen to have on very little apparel. And, you know, I exercise. It's hot in Texas, little, you know, bike shorts, little top. And I'm getting ready to get out of my car, and I'm across from the trail, and I see two boys beating the crap out of each other. And I'm like, oh, my God, and there's a circle of people around them, and no one is stopping it. And I'm like, this is back when I was the sheriff of the world. I mean, I'm running over there, and I'm like, hey, 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 hey. And Charlie says, there's something about that that gets everybody's attention. I just can do it really loud. I'm trying not to do it in the mic too loud. But, I mean, everybody does. And these two boys stop, and they just, right, they shoot off. But I'm shocked that these people are standing around watching. One girl's videoing it. Oh, yeah, welcome to our world of technology. And she's videoing it, and there's adults standing there. So I look at these adults, and I go, really? You didn't do nothing? And I am so pissed. But you know what happened? Everybody backed away from me. And I thought, oh, no. This one really bugs me. And this girl that's videoing, I said, so you're videoing that? She goes, you ruined it. Well, now we got trouble, because now I'm going to jail. You know what I mean? Those are fighting words. Those are handcuff words. I'm going to jail in sobriety. And I looked at her, and I go, really? And she said, yeah. And I reached over, and I patted her like this, which I should never have touched her, but I did. And I said, boy, I really feel sorry for you. And she turned around to walk away, because I'm pretty. I can look big. And And she said the B word when she was walking away. And I had a moment where God was like, oh, you need to stop. You got to walk away from this. And so I walked away. But what happened is anybody that was walking past me walked so far away as if there was something wrong with me. And you may think there was. I don't like injustice in the world. I will speak up. It's a dangerous place to be. But I don't like that type of injustice. I won't cave into it. I believe that there needs to be a voice from time to time. Today, I don't have the voice like I used to have. And so what this whole third step's about is trying to get us to wake up to where it is okay and it's not okay, and where we are with that. You know, of course, I called my sponsor. We talked about it. Marty knows me. She's been sponsoring me forever. But when Charlie got diagnosed with that cancer, I have been a widow. My husband passed away after 23. We were married 20 years after his brain tumor and, you know, his brain damage and 6 years of that. He ended up going back out at 23 years sober and died of a heroin overdose. It was devastating. It was just terrible. And Charlie was my best friend. I mean, we had no sexual energy at all. We were brother, sister. I mean, it was, when I kissed him, it was like kissing your brother. It was bizarre. He didn't see it that way, but I dang sure did. You know, we banged teeth like 5 times, like we're in the 7th grade. Oh my God. He goes to lay me down and I'm really dense because I'm pretty muscular, and he drops me and knocks the wind out of me. And I'm thinking, Oh, this is so wrong on so many levels. And you know, and the other story will be personal, so I'll get the girls together. We'll talk about that. But clearly, we got past that. And one of the things that I can tell you is when he was diagnosed with that, I barely touched on the fact that I don't want to be a widow again. Please, God, don't let me have to be a widow again. I don't want to be a widow at 64. I can darn sure tell you that, because all I see out there in the world is some twisted up sexual stuff at this age group between 40 and 70. Oh, my God. You know, I don't want any of it. And I had it at 40. And I don't want it at 60. And so I'm sitting there, and then the loneliness and the pain and the despair, and all I want to do is grow old with somebody. It's my old idea. I want to grow old with somebody. I want history. I want that feeling that Charlie and I are like this. We call each other. We talk to each other. We travel together. We sleep together. We do everything together. We like that. I'm that girl. I like to spend a lot of time with my husband. And so I knew not to touch that, but every once in a while it would try to enter into my mind. And my daughter called me because they, God knows, they went through all of this with us. And April said, Mom, I want to tell you, I'm in a different place in my life. She's 43, got a couple of our grandkids, great marriage, and always got problems, you know, every marriage does. And she said, I'm here for you, and so if you need to lean on me. And I said, oh, honey, I'm still too young to lean on you. When I'm in my 80s, I'll lean on you, but I'm in my 60s, you know, I'm not going to lean on you. And she goes, no, Mom, it's okay to lean on me. And I said, well, if that's the case, I am really struggling with being a widow again. And I said, my husband doesn't take care of himself. I do. He doesn't. And I mean, I lost it. Just lost it. Hysterical. She's crying. I'm crying. And I said, it just was such a relief to talk to somebody, to say that to somebody. I didn't want to have that conversation with 15 people. I'm not interested in giving it that kind of energy. But somebody who watched me and knew me would be my child. And so when it was all said and done, I couldn't believe God just said, okay. We're done with that. We're not playing in that playground anymore. We're going through this. If that happens, we'll deal with it. But I'm telling you, Katie, he's okay. And I thought, really? Yeah, he's okay. And it was just like it went away. April calls me the next day and goes, Mom, I just want to tell you, after we finished talking, I went and bought 3 pair of shoes. And my husband came to me and said, okay, is this going to happen a lot with your mother? Because, wow, that was an expensive little conversation for us, you know. I thought that was great. Okay, let's get started. So this second surrender, as we like to call it, you can call it anything you want, emotional sobriety. I don't really care what you call it, but I call it a second surrender. And the second surrender is to understanding what the third step's about. And then you're going to have a whole bunch of surrenders between now and the time you die. A bunch. Do not think you're going to only hit one wall. I love to ask people in AA, have you ever hit a wall? They go, no. I'm like, oh, can I just follow you around for about 20 minutes, please, and just observe? You know, because it is the course of life. It's like the decades. In your 20s, you're bulletproof, right? In your 30s, is that you, honey? In your 30s, you're starting to find yourself, right? You're considering having kids. You're going to do this. Are you going to get what's your career going to be? You're going to better your career. In your 40s, you start to perfect all that, right? In your 50s, you start looking back. You know, in your 50s, I mean, I'd like to hope some of you guys are not, you know, procreating still at 50, but it's Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, so in your 50s, you start looking back, and then, you know, in your 60s, you really could care less, and then you go into your 70s, your decades. It's the same thing with spiritual growth. At 5 years, you're a certain way. At 10 years, you're a certain way. At 15 years, and you continue to grow, and the only way you grow is through discomfort, if you ask me. I mean, I've never had an experience that was so great that I grew through it. I enjoyed it. I was grateful to not have to be in a lot of pain behind it. But most of my growth has always been very painful. And I like to say, it's easier to get an alcoholic to stop drinking than it is to get one of us to quit playing God. The not drinking was the easiest part of recovery. And some people say, no, it wasn't. I go, well, I don't know. Do you know what the root of our trouble is? I understand some people can't get sober. And if you can't get sober, then it is very, very difficult. But don't think you get the gold ring because you got sober. It's a huge, huge spiritual awakening. But the biggest one is really understanding how selfish and self-centered we are. I was voted most likable 4 years in a row in high school. I didn't think I was selfish and self-centered because I thought it meant stingy and conceited. Once again, I'm not strong with vocabulary, so I see a word and I immediately assume what it means. And then I just rock on. I'm not going to give it much time. Come to find out, what selfish and self-centered means is all I think about is me. See, that self-centered fear that we have is I'm afraid I'm not going to get it, then I get it, now I'm going to lose it. So I never stop. Everything filters through me. It says in the book that the world and its people really dominate us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, have the power to kill. So it's just the world and all its people. Other than that, go have a good day. It's everything. I mean, have you ever woke up and it's a cloudy day and you immediately get in a bad mood? It's three cloudy days in a row. This sucks. Everything sucks about it. You know, I mean, we just hitch a wagon to something and we just ride that thing all the way down the hill. It says on page 62 that selfishness and self-centeredness, this is a paragraph I love to break down. Selfishness and self-centeredness that we think, the first 100, is the root of our troubles. So think about a tree and its roots. If you want to cut down a tree, you can cut the tree down and the tree is gone. But the roots are all still there. You want to get those roots out, it's a whole other story. You got to get down to root and branch of everything. That's what Bill talks about in his story. Now, were the first 100 doing what we're doing today? I have no idea. I really don't. I don't know that they delved into this like we have to. We live in a different day and age. You can hit the enter button on an email to 1,000 people and piss off 900 of them. See, I don't think they had that opportunity. I think it was a small town. They weren't flying all over the world, you know, and upsetting the whole world. And they just had a smaller world. You had to write a letter, for God's sakes. When was the last time you wrote a letter and mailed it? You know, so maybe they didn't have to do this. My buddy Tom Yule says, you know, Katie, I think God knew that we were going to progress and progress and progress and that we would have to do more than maybe they did. Maybe they did just have to help drunks. But I know a lot of people in AA that help a lot of drunks and don't work their own program, and they're hard to be around. They really are. And you can see it, and I'm not going to point it out to them. I'm the judgment machine right here, right? Oh, boy. What you going to do with that? That we think is the root of our trouble. Now, I am driven by 100 forms of fear. There's the first comma. Fear is not the root of my problem. It's what is the igniter. It's what drives me. So all of a sudden, here's a perfect example. Charlie and I broke up 22 times. I broke up with him. It was all justifiable. And so let's assume we're at a party or at a meeting, and there's a very attractive girl over there, and he's over there talking to her because that's what he did. So I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm driven by the fear. My mind goes right into this. So I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. Oh, I know what's happening over there. Now, he's not going to go anywhere with her, but he's going to get his ego stroked in some way. And then I'm going to start self-seeking. I'm going to walk around and go, so who's that chick over there? So tell me a little bit about her, okay? Now, the whole time I'm just... Right? Oh, my God. I've never lived in this world before. I do not like who I am at all. I become a snooper. Let me tell you, one time my sponsor said when I called to, you know, report what I had found, and some people would say you need Al-Anon. Oh, no. This is not an Al-Anon issue. No, this is a third step issue. I said to Marty, oh, my God, Marty, you want to know what I found? And she said, oh, honey, when are you going to quit hurting yourself so bad? Changed my life. That statement was, at the time, it was exactly what I needed. I was so driven. And what driven means is I'm not choosing to act this way. You guys know that feeling when you can't stop calling somebody or you're driving somewhere where you're going, God, I shouldn't be doing this. Well, there's no turning around. You know, watch for driven, because when you're in it, it's painful, and that's the pain that will get you to stop doing it. You're going to probably follow through. But you're going to at least begin to wake up to it. And then I go to the self-pity. Because now I've ruined the whole party. I've ruined it. And let me tell you, that took me almost 14 years to deal with all of what Charlie and I went through. And still, at the same time, it's not Charlie. Charlie's not the problem. Trust me. That I wanted him to be the problem so bad. I was the problem. And I have tremendous self-worth until you, it says in the book, jealousy is the worst human emotion. And I won't even get into pornography. I wish it just would disappear off the planet. I think it's one of the most deadliest things in the world. Because it's just damaging. It's damaging to everybody around you. And it's a third step issue. If it's actually a six step issue. If it's not objectionable to the individual that's watching it, we got no help here. It's got to be objectionable to them. And it can be objectionable to me, but I can't get anywhere with it. It says, sometimes they hurt us, seeming without provocation. He never intended to hurt me with that situation, ever. He was getting whatever need he needed met. Right? I can say this clearly now because he's not that guy anymore. As a matter of fact, he can do all of that stuff and he's not that guy anymore. But let me tell you what, that brought me closer to God than Joe's death because it threatened every cell of my being. Death was grief. It wasn't coming back. It wasn't being fixed. So actually, to some degree, as painful as that was for me, it was the greatest gift given to me. Because I seeked the Creator at a level that I had no idea I had to get this freedom. And every once in a while, and Charlie has made an amazing amends behind all that, you know, hanky-panky, as we called it back in the 70s. But the beauty of the amends is every once in a while when I get insecure, because I do sometimes, you know, the TV channel, he changes it, and it's like blood shoots out my fingertips. I'm like, what were you watching? You know, and I hate that. I hate to be that insecure. And he'll look at me and go, I always say, Charlie, I'm really having an insecure moment. What were you watching on TV? And because it's not about him. It's about me. And he says, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry you've got that. He said, I was flipping from the basketball game to the football game or baseball game. Or something. I was like, oh, yeah. There you go. Then he always hugs me. And I get to do that like 2 times a year. I don't get to do that every other week. Okay? Let's be very clear on that. But invariably, we find that we made a decision based on self that later placed us in a position to be hurt. You see, when I start thinking I know what you're doing and thinking and saying, I'm in real trouble, real trouble. We use the term in AA codependent. Not a fan of that. That our book doesn't use the word codependent. It uses self-seeker. I'm a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. We have many words in the book. I like to go back to those words because that's the terminology we're learning from. See, in my DNA, I don't think too much of myself or too little of myself. All I think about is me. Where am I in the line? Are they going to have enough food by the time I get up there? Oh, my God, is this person coming to talk to me? Oh, just a constant moving target there up there in the mind. You would never know it because it's like, hey. Right? So, but the beauty is, and it's so funny because I'm a line cutter, and I told you I'm dishonest. I can lie, right? And I'm a line cutter. I mean, I cut lines everywhere I can. And I do it to where you don't even know I cut the line because I'm just swell. And so I cut the line this morning, got caught. Actually got called out on the line cutter. Where are you guys that called me out on line cutting? No, well, Jimmy always is watching me like a hawk. I swear to God, all of a sudden you hear this. It's like, oh, that must be Jimmy. I've done something, you know. So I cut the line, but I don't know if you guys noticed the woman on the end of the serving line. She's tough. Nobody's getting nothing without going through her. So I'm also a con artist, so I've stood back and I have witnessed this. And I need another bowl for the fruit because I like a lot of fruit. And I don't want to put it next to my eggs. And so I go up to her and I said, ma'am, can I get another bowl? And there's hesitation. And I thought, I need it to split my oatmeal with somebody. And she goes, oh, okay. And I turned around and I thought, well, I'm a big fat liar. I'm just a big fat liar. But then I had to come back and wait till somebody big enough was standing in front of the fruit so she didn't see me getting it. Am I going to hell? I don't think so. So I do want you to know that we are not shooting for perfection. So on page 60, it says we were at step three, right? And when we were at step three, that is italicized. Very important to understand the italics, right? And then over on page 63, right before the prayer, it says we are now at step three, and that's not in italics. I believe that they're getting ready to tell us the many different ways that self shows up. This is my take on it. Many different ways that self shows up on page 60 all the way to page 63. And then it says, we are now at step three. That's just the affirmation of the decision we made to understand what it is we're looking for. That's what I think. Because it's the third step is not just the prayer. It's the affirmation of what we just understood. So we break that down. Charlie did a great job. It's which we decide to turn our will and our life over the care of God as we understand it. What does that mean? I always like to say our will is our thoughts and our care is our actions. This whole thing in life is about my thoughts and my actions. My thoughts and my actions. That's what the 10th step will constantly take us back to. We are to watch for resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. And when these crop up, because they will, it's not my actual action of being resentful. It's my thought life. We're trying to get my God consciousness and my thought life on the same plane. That is a lot of work to get that to happen. You can't just read some great piece of chicken soup for the soul spiritual thing and shut your book, go, oh, God, I needed that today. Oh, yeah. You know, 8 minutes into traffic, you're over there flipping somebody off, right? Or you're like, God dang, oh, we got the good Samaritans going to let everybody in. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's the way this deal rolls out. It's a cause and effect. My external affairs are always a demonstration of my internal condition. You see, it's like Emmett Fox says, you can't plant a rose and expect a tulip to come up, right? You've got to understand this process. Thought, react, thought, react. That's what we usually live in instead of this thought, God consciousness. And Charlie said, we spend the next two pages explaining what do we mean, and then it goes into what do we do. And that's important because the what do we mean is a deep part of this. And what do we do? Turning it over to God. People say, well, I turned it over to God. I'm like a pancake flipping a pan. I can't do that. I can't just turn it over to God. I have to do the work behind it in order to get the gift. You know, somebody will come up to you and say, you know, would you rather be right or happy? And I just want to slap you. It's like, did you hear my problem? You're giving me the solution, expecting me to work that's the promise. You're expecting me to work the step based on the promise. If you want me to, I've got the promise. Would you rather be right or happy? Clearly, I would rather be right. But I need the happiness. So it's working the promise, expecting the step to come true. You got to do it the other way around. I don't want to hear the solution when I'm angry. I want you to get to, the promise, I want you to get to the solution of where I made decisions based on self. Start asking me a ton of questions. Well, who is this person? What do they do? Where have they been in your life? How long have you been there? To where you can begin to start seeing the problem. It says that the first requirement is, Katie, got to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I'm telling you what, guys, I think 80% of AA is not convinced of that. I got that bowl. That's self-reliance. You know, I mean, it may be small in your book, but it was very clear what I was doing. Didn't like that I'm doing that. Probably could have asked. She could have said no. I'd have been frustrated. But I wanted the bowl. And so I do what I got to do. And I see those things in my life. It's not good, bad, right, wrong. It is just who we are. And the more you see, the more you get down to understanding that God loves me no matter if I got the bowl or didn't get the bowl. It's me that's going to get that on the ball, no big deal. Other things in life, big deal. And then, so we're always looking at, see, I don't know I have a kind motive until you don't react the way I want you to. That's what the third step's trying to get us to, is this kind motive, right? The new guy comes in, we teach him integrity. I'm going to call him a guy because that's what the book says. The new guy comes in, we're going to teach him integrity, dignity, honor, respect. Your word is your word. You get here on time. You say you're going to do something. You do something. This is what is necessary that we teach him. But at about 18 months of sobriety, you watch. We've given him the key to the clubhouse. He comes in, he's setting up the chairs, he's making the coffee. He's just a swell guy and he's happy that he's doing it. And by about 20 months, 24 months, he's looking around going, they're taking advantage of me. That's what they're doing. I've been doing this job for a long time. Nobody's trying to take this job from me, right? And the next thing you know, he's got to go because he's worked a program based on the abstinence of alcohol. At about 3 years is when you start to really wake up to selfishness and self-centeredness, because you can be carried a long time on just the abstinence of alcohol. You can say the acceptance prayer in early sobriety, and it works right up till it doesn't work anymore. That's why you got to keep growing spiritually, and you've got to get into things to understand. So behind this kind motive, my examples are always, somebody letting them in traffic. I'm a giver. Come on. Four cars didn't let you in. Eye contact. Yeah, that's what you got. And then all of a sudden, they become the Good Samaritan. Dude, that was not expected. I needed a little hand wave, and then we keep it tight, 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 right? But no. Then, or somebody that holds the door for you, or if I hold the door for you and you make no eye contact, you don't say thank you, you're looking at your phone, you're walking by. If you're looking at your phone and you almost run into me, wow, do I have to keep that to myself. I mean, in the gym, if you're sitting on a piece of equipment and you just don't get off that phone, I am in jail in my head. And I'm like, you know what, God, under no circumstances am I the sheriff of that piece of machinery. I'm just going to let that person do that, and you got to let me just walk on and do something else. Because there's certain things in life that just bug the crap out of me. But if I said something, I can be that same hypocrite. I can sit on a piece of machinery and just look real quick to see what my messages were. It may be only a 15-second break, but I'm doing the same thing they were doing. So see, I'm a hypocrite also. Always important for me to always be watching these things. Some may say that's too much work. Fine. It's what I have to have. It's necessary. I also think we're givers, and, we see some trash on the park, and we bend over and pick it up and kind of give it one of these. Because, I'm so good. And do you ever feel like you need to be the sheriff of the handicapped parking spot? You're looking to see is there a tag hanging down? Whose car is this? Who parked in the handicap? But now, if it's pouring down rain and there's 7 handicap spots and I need to just run in for a sec, I'll whip in there and I'm running in going, I'm in the handicap. I know I am. I just have to get something real quick because I'm a hypocrite. See, I'll hold you accountable. I'm the actor running the whole show. I love the line, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the scenery, and value. The book is always telling me this is a lifetime. Don't think you've ever arrived. Matter of fact, if you think you've arrived, that's when trouble happens. Thank God I don't have that problem anymore. The ego loves that. The ego, I always feel like, is that, in Texas, we got a lot of snakes. And that's just the nature of Texas. And they love to just sit there, and you don't even know they're there. They blend in with the sand and stuff like that. And the next thing you know, you get too close, and they get you. And you're like, holy smokes, I never even saw the darn thing. That's what the ego's doing. It's just sitting there waiting, and it'll do, all of a sudden it'll go, oh, you don't need that. Don't let them do that. What? Hey. And then you buy into this line of a lie. It's always a lie. And the ego wants you to get justice. To get right and to get justice. The delusion is, if everybody would do as I wish. Oh, let me tell you. The delusion is, if everyone would do as I wish, the show would be great. Everyone, including myself, would be happy. There's the lie. How many times have you gotten what you wanted and you're not happy? About 99 times, right? Charlie, oh my God, It's constantly, are you going to eat well? I am not the arbiter of his food. Have at it. Do whatever. Just have the will signed. Okay. Let's work with that. I mean, 20 years together, I'm surrendered that. But to me, he wakes up and he goes, Katie, I'm gonna be on the good foot today. Okay, I'll be supportive. Let's be on the good foot. And he goes, yeah, I'm gonna start exercising and eat right. Okay, good. Well, I have a whole gym in the house, and I have my time. I work out, and I get all my meditation done and everything. I go walking into the gym to get on my treadmill, and my husband's on it. Well, all of a sudden, I'm not too happy because the show's not coming off the way I wanted it to. It's like, oh, now see, dude, you can't do it at this time. Okay, see, this is my time. And that's what I'm saying is, some people will say, my husband travels. I'm sick of him traveling. I wish he'd be home. You may not wish for that. You know what I mean? All of a sudden he's home. Now he's bugging the crap out of you. I mean, there's, you see the delusion and all that? We think we know if I had that job, that's the answer. And you get the job, and all of a sudden you go, yeah, see, this isn't it either. Because that's where it all comes in. So then you've got that toolkit of self-will, kind, considerate, passionate, generous, modest, and self-sacrificing. You know, on the other hand, mean, egotistical, selfish. Charlie and I, we're both cons. And, you know, we are the yin and the yang. There is no yang in our game, man. Yin and the yang, fighting the whole way like this to get to the front. And where it's in the airport, we work in airport beautifully. Beautifully. We're in a hurry and we got to get to that line that there's that security guard. I'm telling you, we can pan out. Charlie took in and I thought, oh man, the guy got ready to turn around. If I'd have turned in, he'd have caught me. So can't do that because we can't miss the flight. And Charlie said, he looked up and he goes, God, I can't believe Katie didn't make the move. And I came back around, and then when he got all the way down there, I told the guy I got ready to go. And he goes, ma'am, I'm sorry, you can't go. No, that's my husband right there. My husband's right there. And he goes, oh, okay, go ahead. And when I came up to Charlie, he goes, I couldn't believe he didn't bust the move. I said, oh, Charlie, we would have been both been caught, and we were going to miss the flight. Because sometimes you get to an airport, and it's way bigger than you think. You know, this is a big mountain to climb. I have cut an entire line at Southwest. And let me tell you, here's the tricky part. Now, I'm saying these stories, so I hope you're relating and not judging the crap out of me, okay? Let's be very understanding about why I'm telling this stuff. I realize, oh, my God, I am traveling between Thanksgiving and Christmas. That week is the worst week to travel. My girlfriend's having a surprise birthday party in California. And I get in the airport. I'm like, holy smokes, before clear or anything. And and I think, oh, I'm screwed. So I look at the guy behind me. I said, you want to bust a move? And he goes, no. Okay. I said, I gave you the chance. I'm busting it. And I start cutting that line. And the one thing you don't ever want to do is make any eye contact, right? You're just, excuse me. And I make the whole way, all the way down. And when I'm coming to the end, I realize I got no plan. I've run on fear, and I've got no plan. And I think, oh, boy, this is where I'm going to be humiliated. They're going to say, you can't cut the line, get to the end of the line. Everybody's going to be, right? So I get all the way up there, and I look up right when I'm on that last run, and I'm scanning, and I see a family, and the woman's at the front, and the three teenage kids are back with the dad. Well, that's my girl. That's me. So I come up right to the dad, and I looked at him. I go, I'm going to miss my flight. Can I be a part of your family? And he looks at me, and he goes, honey, your sister's here. I was like, I am the luckiest individual in the whole wide world. And when she did that, we all walked to the plane together. We happened to be on the same flight. And I looked at her. I said, I knew you'd get it. And she goes, oh, my God, that was priceless. Well, here's the really tricky part of the story. I'm on the plane. The guy I said, well, you want to bust a move with, gets on the plane. You see, that's what happens when I'm driven. I could have just waited and been patient. Now, this is, you know, my girlfriend's now 57. That was 7 years ago. I'm not the sheriff of the world. I don't do this much. The kid I stopped the fight was probably about 6 years ago. I am not the sheriff of the world anymore. You would be shocked at how many of these things I let go, right? I'm at the dentist office. I don't care much for a ton of cleavage. I think it's way over the top these days. Like, my God, do you just have strings across your nipples? You know, I mean, oh my God. And so I'm at the dentist's office. I mean, I got under boob, over boob, side boob. You got everything but the nipple. At the receptionist. And I'm standing there and I think, oh. And I just said, I heard God go, this is not your place anymore. You know, and what I would have said to the girl is, you know, hon, that's the angle I got. Wow, that's a lot of boob. I might just want to kind of tone that down a little bit. You know what I mean? I wouldn't go, oh, for God's sakes, what are you thinking? You know, I would have said it kindly. But it's none of my business. It just isn't my business today. I walked out. I was very proud of myself. Walked out. Didn't do anything about it. And to me, I'll let somebody else take care of that because it's just not my problem. I used to try to solve all the problems of the world, and I was the sheriff, and you thought you were, and you're not. I am. You're the deputy. I'm the sheriff. So it says, what usually happens, show doesn't come off very well. This is where Charlie left. This is where we live with my sponsees. You call me with the 10th step, and we live right here. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. See, most of us, believe it or not, are the glass half empty, not half full. Most of us. We wake up, I love Chris Schroeder says, we wake up restless, irritable, and discontented. We either go up to happy, joyous, and free, or down to the four horsemen. It's just of our nature. Why in the world would it say when we wait upon awakening, we ask to be divorced from self-pity, not fear, dishonest, and self-seeking motives? Or does it say in your first 5 years, after that coast, it's all good? You won't have to worry about that. It doesn't. Because once we wake up and see it, so I wake up, I've got the self-pity. I begin to think life doesn't treat me right. He decides to exert himself more. This is where I'm driven. More demanding, more gracious, right? The toolkit of self-will kicks in. Still, the play doesn't suit me. Admitting I may be somewhat at fault, others are more to blame. I'm not kidding you. Mr. Blame-O-Matic right there. It's it's father blame. Jesus, who left the fridge door open? Oh, for God's sakes, who turned the air conditioner down this low? You know what I mean? It's always who. I'm like, oh, I get me. I'm the only other one in the house. Yeah. Did it, you know. Where's Katie? Where's my toothbrush? Well, the insinuating tone is I wouldn't touch your toothbrush because it's gross. Okay? So I didn't touch it. I mean, it's unbelievable how we blame. I mean, unbelievable. So he says he becomes angry, column 2, indignant, column 3, and self-pity, column 4. In the third step, it's already breaking it down right there, that you need to look at all of those things. That's the inventory process. Now, when the longer we're sober, we have high-end problems. I hope you do. I hope if you get mad that the pool boy put too much chlorine in your pool, that's a legitimate 10th step if it pissed you off. I wouldn't necessarily go into an AA meeting and raise my hand and complain about that, but that's a 10-step call to your sponsor, because you start to get the gifts of sobriety, and all of a sudden, you know, so your neighbor tells you you need to cut your grass. You know why? You need to cut your grass. You know, we want to kind of keep this up a little bit. What's his basic trouble? Is he not a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? See, the third step is trying to wake us up to this kindness issue. When I'm acting like a jerk, I'm very clear I'm acting like a jerk. When I'm acting kind, I am blinded. Most of the time, I do know my motive. It says that we're people pleasers. A lot of people say I'm a people pleaser or I'm a perfectionist. A people pleaser is an approval sucker, and a perfectionist is a pain in the ass, okay? They make you crazy because they're perfect. No, it has to be this way because you're like, oh, I can't work with you. No. That's what we are. But the word sounds like we're just, wow, I'm so glad I hired a perfectionist. You're a lot of work. Everybody's got to do it the way you want it done. You see what I mean? We use a lot of terminology. Then it says, is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he manages well? Break that one down. A victim means I'm tricked or duped by my delusion, not denial. The word denial is used one time in a doctor in the back of the book. Delusion is what we suffer from. See, denial is that when you see the truth, you can't have it anymore, right? Denial is that way. Delusion is you see the truth and you still don't believe it. See, you set somebody up, you ask them a question. Were you with so-and-so? There's only one acceptable answer. And actually, there's not one acceptable answer. Neither answer is acceptable. No, I wasn't. Well, you're lying. Yes, I was. Well, now you're in trouble. So you see, I've set you up completely by asking that question. So when we look at the pause when agitated or doubtful in the 11th step, believe it or not, if you discipline yourself and you really do this work at the level that we're talking, you will have that 2-second pause that says, no, don't ask that question. You're not prepared for the answer. And let me tell you, there's a lot of those that go on in my world with Charlie and his harem, okay? The harem is not what I need to go into. It never goes well. And that's just the nature of it. It never goes well. Because Charlie is Charlie. Right, Danny? The harem, yeah. Danny's got a little harem, too. And they are the harem boys. So if you get in a relationship with them, oh, there's a whole bunch of people that come with it. And I'm the girl that doesn't care much for a harem. You know, you may be okay with that. I'm not. So we got conflict. So delusion, now listen to the definition of delusion. It's an impression that is firmly maintained despite being contradicted by what is accepted as reality, typically a symptom of a mental disorder. Makes me feel good. I don't know how that makes you feel, but I like that. I'm like, okay, that makes me feel better. And it says that we can rest. That means seized by force. Satisfaction, there's the being right and happy. So I'm a victim of this whole storyline that I play in my own mind, that if it goes this way, it will be fill in the blank, and it usually doesn't happen that way. Is it evident to all the rest of the players these are the things she wants, and don't her actions make each of them wish to snatch and retaliate everything they can out of the show? Have you ever been around somebody that you see is working an angle and it pisses you off? Okay, the same thing happens when we're working the angle. The rest of the world is mad. They're seeing what you're trying to do. See, it goes both ways. I could be either person in that play. And I'll tell you, the guy that almost hit us in the Escalade, I was on a mission to find out who he was in the airport. I mean, I am just looking for him. Because, I mean, we made eye contact. He was just like, and the next thing you know, he's left the Escalade out front in the airport. So I really want to find out who he is. He just left it running, jumped out. And so I'm in the airport looking for him. Next thing I know, he's in handcuffs. The police have him, and I, there's the guy. And he goes, oh, man, did he get caught? I said, I got to find out what happened. So after one cop takes him out, Gladys Kravitz, I'm like, dude, what happened? I said, my God, we saw him pulling in, almost his, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, well, it seems to be that he had bought a ticket on the internet. And blah, blah, blah. The guy told me the whole story because that's what I get out of people. I can't believe where I can get in life. I can ask a complete stranger a question, and they will tell me the answer, and then at the end of it, they go, I can't believe I just told you that. I go, I can. Bye-bye. You know, there's just something in my personality that, you know, I can get all the information. So is he not in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? How many times do we realize how pissed off people are because we were running the show and we were throwing a party or whatever we were doing and everybody's frustrated at us? Start watching for that. It's all right there. This is where the amends comes into play. I like to explain, and we won't go too terribly much longer, guys. I know you're tired. The way self shows up for me in Charlie and I's world is Charlie's family is what we call story stealers. It's shocking at the level of story stealing. However, we all do it. And what happens is, I think the reason, and this is just my assumption, is in AA, we sit in a meeting, somebody opens the topic, somebody talks, I start thinking about what they're saying and how I relate, somebody else talks, how I hear what they say, they relate, and then I finally get to tell what I want to say, right? And I think we are just kind of bred with that experience and relating. So if I come to you and say, oh my God, I'm going to Costa Rica next week. The first thing you're going to say is, oh my God, I've been to Costa Rica. Well, see, I don't really care right now. I'm still talking. I'd like to finish my train of thought, and I'd actually like for you to ask me a question or two. And then, if your Costa Rica story is important, then you can share it. It's called story stealing. So the next thing you know, we're fighting for airspace. Now I'm ready for you to take a breath. I go, and when we go to Costa Rica, you know, and so watch for this story stealing. It's off the chain in these rooms, off the chain. Mark Houston loved it when he heard me say it. Charlie's family, you can't even get a, if you take a breath, they're jumping in. Or there's a second part of story stealing, which is having your hand up, right? The horse shack, Mr. Carter. And I swear to God, I'll tell Charlie, he won't put his hand up, and I'll go, Charlie, put your hand down. I'm still talking. And he lets out air. Sorry, Katie. I'm like, oh, my God. And so at a workshop, I said, you know what we need to do? We need to learn to ask three questions. So somebody's talking. You're going to have that knee-jerk reaction to tell your story. Don't do it. And just start trying to become an active listener because it requires work. And you become an active listener, then you ask three questions. And then if you feel it necessary to tell your story, then tell your story. Well, at the end of the workshop, this guy comes running up to me, and he's got a pen and paper, goes, what are the three questions? Now, do you see how not that many people laughed? Because you're going, what are the three questions? It's like, well, you big dodo, it depends on what they're talking about. There's not like three pad questions you get to ask. You're talking about going on a trip, you go, how many kids do you have? That's not an appropriate question. And I didn't realize that till we did it in Canada, and only half the room chuckled. And I thought, and a buddy came up and he goes, because they didn't get it. And I said, wow, becoming an active listener will open your world amazing to learn not to be the talker. It's fascinating. But we shut that part of our life off and we don't even know it. So I encourage you to try it today. Now, it'll look very mechanical. You'll be going. Because you want to say something so bad. And watch when they take a breath. You're like, miss my opportunity. That's okay. I'll come back to it. Story stealing. Okay. The other one I say to be careful of is self-talk. I have a sponsee that does it all the time. I have to constantly tell her. I say, now, when you tell me you said, now, so-and-so, don't do this. I said, tell me that you're really actually talking to God. Because, see, say you're nervous and you're going to walk in somewhere. That's not at all unusual for anybody. I don't care how much self-worth and self-esteem you have. People get nervous in circumstances. You're going to walk in somewhere and all of a sudden you go, now, come on, Katie, you can do this. Try to look them in the eye and say this and do that. See, that's self-talk. That's not a prayer. Or don't wait till your hand's on the doorknob to say the prayer. You need to have worked way farther upstream on this situation, right? If you're doing 10 and 11, it's constantly talking about your future. We're to look at our day. Where are we going to have some bumps in the road? And then there's two situations that I had that, oh my gosh, the level of self-centeredness is really unbelievable. It's not a horrible, bad thing, but it is shocking sometimes to you. My son-in-law, we were all out at dinner one time, and he has something that his throat can close up with certain foods or whatever, and it just kind of gets stuck in his throat. And I know this can happen from time to time. Usually we've got to run him to the hospital, be sure everything's okay, and he gets it all taken care of. And he's sitting there, and it's Charlie, me, and the grandson, and Devin, and he starts I'm like, Devin, you okay? and I looked at Charlie and I thought, I'm going to take the grandson over to the claw machine because I love the claw machine. I'm very good at it. And oh my God, I'm good at it. My son's better than I am, but I am really good at it. So we go over to the claw machine and I'm feeding, you know, a buck in there and, you know, Ryder's looking at it, you know, a little more to the left, Graham, and all this. And all of a sudden, Devin comes out and he goes, we're going to, and I am this far from getting a toy. I mean, this far. The claw's got to do one more time in there. And Devin goes, I think we need to go to the hospital. And you know what I said? Can you give me 1 minute? Yep. And he, I swear to God, this is what he did. He looked at me and goes, oh, and he just turned and walked. And I was like, oh, my God. I cannot believe I did that. I said, Ryder, we got to go. So I get out to the car. Now this is where we alcoholics will fall on our sword, is where you go, I am so sorry. That was so thoughtless. And we just, you know, until he finally gives me relief. I didn't do that. I just said, Devin, I'm so sorry. It was very thoughtless. Went around to my side of the car. I really wanted him to try to talk through this and tell me it's okay, Katie. I'll be fine. See, it never goes out of my mind, right? Now, well, the best part of the story is, though, the next day I ran by there and got the toy. No one had messed with the claw machine. Yep, I was very, very happy. So then one other time I was at the, I got Invisalign because I had a tooth turning sideways and I'm big on teeth. And I can't be having no teeth turned sideways on me. And so the guy said, you know, you can do Invisalign for about 6 months, but we don't do it here. You got to go down to the orthodontist. So I go to the orthodontist. Well, you know, there's 19 chairs and everybody's under 15 getting braces and then I'm laying there getting Invisalign. And my dentist, super nice guy, very fit, we start talking about fitness. Well, you know, it's a fascinating topic. And he's a bike rider, yada, yada, yada. And so I'm standing there and we are having this conversation and everybody comes into the office and is standing there because they're fascinated with me. They're just listening to my conversation. I'm thinking, you know, he's coming, I'm coming, we're talking about. And they're just standing there, and I thought, wow, that was really something. You know, I got to go. Nice seeing you guys, you know. You got to be in my world for a few minutes. I'm leaving, right? I get in my car, and I think, you know what? I'm going to eat my lunch in there and brush my teeth because they got everything. They got the floss. They got the toothbrush. You can do everything in there. So I come walking back in there, and the door is locked. I look in. Nobody's there. And I went, oh, my God. They were coming in to go shut this chick up and get her out of here because we need to shut the place down. I didn't see that. I would never have seen that had I not gone back. So when I went back the next time, I said to the receptionist and the couple of girls, I said, I'm sorry I kept you guys late. And they were like, it's okay. You know, but I thought that it's because I was so fascinating. It's very, very interesting when you start to see some of this stuff. See, I can see it in others, but I'm blinded to it in myself. I like the words in the book. I like to change the words in the book. I don't like to use the word codependent. I don't like manipulative and controlling. I don't like expectations. I don't like belief systems. Our book doesn't have that. So what it has is codependent is I'm the actor running the whole show, trying to get you to do what I want, so I'll be okay, right? If everyone would do as I wish. Manipulative and controlling is where I'm a self-seeker. I'm trying to get you. I'm trying to manipulate you to do what I want you to do. Expectations are ambitions, right? The book uses our ambitions in the third column. And then belief systems, the book uses old ideas, prejudice, and values. See, it's always my belief systems. Old ideas, I didn't even understand what that term meant. It's like, what is an old idea? And once again, most people think old ideas are bad. They turn good the longer I'm a better sponsor than you are. I'm a better person than you are. I'm better than mother. I'm a better neighbor. I'm a better boss. That's just what we do. I'm almost always better. Now, don't get me wrong. We'll get more into this in the fourth column when we have the ego turned inward. See, I'm clearly an extrovert, right? And I mean, I came out of the womb, I think, going, hey, where are we going from here? My dad and I fought like cats and dogs. We were exactly alike. He said he got pissed off when I was 15. He said, if you can't live under the rules of this house, you can't live here. I saw it as a free ticket to leave. I left and never went back. Graduated high school, got everybody to do as I wish. It was unbelievable. See, I was never going to be on the streets. I was never going to be that girl. It just couldn't be me. I have to prove to you I can do this. And one of the things about the ego turned inward is you wouldn't say peep if you had a mouthful. You'd wish you were like me. And here's the problem with that, is you see, as hard as it is for you to speak up, it's that hard for me to shut up. So it's just the different ways that self manifests. The challenge is still the same. See, I couldn't tell that girl about her cleavage. And let me tell you, those were 7 minutes that were challenging. Say it, don't say it. God help me. It's not. Oh boy, there we go again. You looked at it. Stop looking at it. Try to look at her in the eye. And let me tell you, it's not even attractive. It's like, maybe men think that's attractive. That was like, wow, that is not. They're kind of like wide. What are you doing here? But lots of thoughts when you start watching your thoughts. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. See, my problems are not Charlie. My troubles are of my own making. They arise out of ourself, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. That comma is profound. See, you go, extreme example of self-will, I don't think so. We usually don't. And once we start really, really getting deeper and deeper into how we show up, once again, it's not designed for you to take a mallet and beat your head, self over the head. Four steps says that we are to get rid of it promptly and without regret. Don't go from self-righteous to self-pity. It says in the fifth step, we will be delighted that we know our Creator better. We have to do this without beating ourselves up. You completely detoured the whole process when you do that, right? And so I'm gonna whip through this quickly. You know what? How about we take a few minute break and then we come back? All right, guys. Thanks. They're just.